Good evening. Hi, how are you doing? I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to Ask a Vegan. It is April 8th, 2012. Time marches on. April. April's my favorite month. I think April's my favorite month. Well, for now, it's my favorite month because this is the month we're in. Why not make every month your favorite month? But it's an exceptional spring. The last few years during spring, it's rained quite a bit, and we have had an incredibly moderate year this year. And I don't want to say those two evil words, global warming. Maybe it has nothing to do with that. Maybe we just deserve a beautiful spring, but it's really been lovely outside, and I'm enjoying it so much, eating out on the terrace, going for runs. It's just perfect, perfect weather. And this is a holiday weekend, and I hope everyone is enjoying their weekend, whatever they may follow or observe or practice. What I always love about holidays, of course, are the food traditions, because it's all about food for me. And as I've explained many times before, I am not a religious person. I don't follow any particular protocol. But I do follow traditional recipes, and I love this when the seasons change and when the holidays come along and make some of those traditional recipes and certainly veganize them. Veganize. That must be, I wonder if that's entered the dictionary yet. It's definitely a word that a lot of us are using, but I don't know if it's an officially blessed word, veganize. But I do love veganizing holiday foods. The one that I did this year, I want to say it was successful, but it still needs a little work. So one of the big traditions during the Passover holiday is the matzo ball soup. So according to the Passover holiday, if you are observing it, you are not supposed to eat leavened bread. Now, this gets really, I'm trying not to use judgmental words here because personally I think it's a little nutty, but if you're serious about it, that's okay. But the rules for food are very restrictive during Passover, and you are not supposed to eat leavened bread, going along with the story of the Jewish people leaving Egypt in the time of the Egyptian pharaoh, and he had them enslaved. We're going to talk a bit about slavery throughout this show, so it's going to be a continuing theme. In this biblical story, the Jews are trying to get out of slavery, and Moses is their leader, and he's leading them out. And as they're rushing out of Egypt, because every time the Pharaoh agrees to let them go, he changes his mind at the last minute, so they're in a big rush to go, and they put, it's quite a little romantic story and a nice image, they put their bread, which hasn't had time to rise, on their backs to bake in the sun, and they take off and they walk. And so the bread becomes a cracker, almost a flat bread. And so in memory of this, and it's kind of a fun tradition, we are commanded to eat matzah, this flat bread. But it gets really, I don't know who made up these rules, but we're not supposed to eat anything leavened. That means anything that's made to rise with yeast. But all of the wheat products have to have some sort of blessing, and there have been a lot of recipes that have been created based on this unleavened bread that has been remade into flour that can then be baked into foods that you might eat during this holiday. But in addition, there's a whole bunch of other foods that are included in this list, foods that really I don't think existed for the most part back when these people were exiting Egypt and going into Israel. Corn syrup, I don't know. Were they making corn syrup back then? There's a lot of different foods, cereals, and beans that are not allowed during Passover. And it can get a little challenging for a vegan, because what most people eat during this holiday is matzah, eggs, and some meats and fruits. It's a very constipating week because the matzah is typically made from a highly processed white flour. You package that together with eggs, and it's a recipe for a lot of slow movements or lack of movements. Anyway, there is this tradition of making matzo ball soup, taking the matzo flour. So this is the matzo that's been made, and you can purchase it as a flour, and putting it together traditionally with chicken fat and eggs and making a ball, it looks like a white meatball, and putting it in a chicken soup. Well, there have been many variations on this theme because it's one of these classic soups that is comforting and traditional, and the grandmother made it and it had a lot of love in it. Okay, so there are some wonderful recipes out there, and it's not hard to make the soup vegan, but what's been challenging is the matzo ball, and I don't know that anybody's really made an equivalent vegan matzo ball, and I put the extra challenge on myself by making a gluten-free matzo ball, so that makes it even more challenging. I used Nava Atlas Vegan Holiday Kitchen. This is a great cookbook, and I'm really just getting to know it. I don't use cookbooks a lot because I basically just go into the kitchen and say, what am I going to make, and figure it out. But there's a lot of wonderful recipes in here in this book, Vegan Holiday Kitchen. I spoke with Nava Atlas on my It's All About Food show back in December, I think, when this cookbook came out, and I really, really recommend it. There's a lot of good traditional recipes in there. And so she has a recipe for a vegan matzo ball using matzo meal flour and quinoa flakes, and you can make it gluten-free with all quinoa flakes. Now, I have never used quinoa flakes, and I don't have them, and my local store didn't have them. So I have to find them. That's another project. Hopefully I'll get to it by next year. And I used brown rice flour, and it worked really, really well. And so we had our vegan version of the matzo ball soup. Now here's the issue that I have with the holiday itself. The story is about a people who have been enslaved and their story to obtain freedom. It's a lovely story. We've seen Charlton Heston play Moses in the movies. And it's an important story, but the difficulty I have often during this holiday when the tradition is to retell the story is thinking about not only the Jewish people in that point in history, but in all history. Humans keep repeating the same things. You know, we all talk about how lovely peace is, and yet we continue to exploit other peoples. Slavery continues. And there are many shades of gray when it comes to exploitation and how we treat each other, how we treat other human beings on this planet that we share, but also how we treat animals. And every time I go through this story and hear about these enslaved people and what they wanted to do and what they tried to do and how hard they tried to gain their freedom, I think of all life on earth. I think of all animals that deserve to have a free life to pursue what it is they've been meant to pursue, to live with their families. And it's just frustrating that everyone around me, not everyone, but many around me do not see the story as applying to all life on Earth. It also applies to our Earth. Some could find a metaphor where the Earth, to some degree, is being exploited, maybe is a slave in some ways. But I think the Earth ultimately can protect herself and ultimately get rid of the things that aren't causing her to, enabling her to thrive. And that means us. That's what I reflect on during the Passover holiday. Now, there's also Easter going on. And I don't know the details of Easter. I've certainly seen a lot of movies. We used to watch The Robe a lot on the weekends during Easter. And I've certainly learned about it a variety of different ways from people that I know who observe Easter. One important tradition, of course, is chocolate. And who doesn't love chocolate? There's a handful of people who don't love chocolate, but for the most part, many of us really love chocolate. And, as I mentioned before about slavery, unfortunately, there is slavery connected to chocolate. I remember when I was first made aware of it, it was probably about 10 years ago, when I read John Robbins' article, "Is There Slavery in Your Chocolate?" And it was really a devastating article. When we think about chocolate, something that is so pleasurable and is associated with festivities and celebrations and feeling good, to know that many of the chocolate that we have here in the United States, the most popular brands that I have personally eaten, have been, the cocoa beans have been harvested by children that are treated as slaves. And it's really hard to swallow, no pun intended. And so clearly there are things that we can do so that we're not supporting the slavery. And I'll get to that in a minute. But there was an article that recently came out on Eatocracy. So that's part of CNN, eatocracy.cnn.com. On April 4th, they had an article on slavery-free chocolate, and they were basically talking about how much chocolate we consume and what companies still get cocoa beans from the Ivory Coast, where that child slavery is most prevalent. And, you know, when it comes to child slavery, it's probably the worst that you can imagine, where these children are made to work very long hours. They're not really given much in return in terms of food and shelter. It's very, very unpleasant. And that's what's in so much chocolate. And when people are observing Easter and thinking about, I want to say, the good things that come out of religion, the good about how to treat each other with compassion and kindness and to reduce pain and suffering, and giving to our children all of these wonderful, tasty treats, and not realizing, not connecting the dots with the cruelty that went into bringing those relatively inexpensive products to our stores and into our homes. Add to that, not just the chocolate, but the eggs. And eggs are a very popular symbol for Easter. And there are lots of fun things that are associated with eggs. There are the Easter egg hunts where you can hide eggs, you can hide chocolate, you can hide lots of fun treats, and the kids go and look for the treats, and when they find them, they win them, and that's fun. And it's a great thing to do. Decorating eggs, I haven't done that in a long time, but I remember as a child doing the egg decoration with my Girl Scout troop and at home sometimes, any time of the year, not just for Easter, but this is a fun thing to do. But when we think about where the majority of these eggs come from, unless you know the particular hen and where she came from, and if she was just running around the farm and occasionally dropped an unfertilized egg somewhere, most of the eggs that we get today, even if they say free range on the carton, they came from places where there's a lot of pain and suffering, a lot of exploitation, a lot of horrible mistreatment of the hens that lay these eggs. And so many of us never think about where the eggs come from, what the hens had to do to make the large quantity of eggs that we have today in this country at very low prices, and where all that chocolate came from. Okay, so I'm putting it out there, and I hope more people will think about it. So what are some of the solutions we hear on the news, especially around this time? How healthy chocolate is, and definitely dark chocolate that has a low sugar content is healthy. There was a program on the news last night that talked about how you can actually lose weight eating chocolate. Now, of course, you never really get reliable information on news programs, and it's more about the soundbite than about the quality of the information. But I like dark chocolate, and I will have a small piece of dark chocolate almost every day. It's when the chocolate is very high quality, and when you have developed a palate where you don't require the sugary sweetness, just enough sweetness to smooth out the bitterness of the cocoa, it's a very satisfying flavor. You don't need a lot. And it's a nice way to finish a meal or before bedtime, just a nice taste on the palate. Of course, you want to brush your teeth after. But chocolate is a good food, and it has lots of things in it, magnesium, things that are nutritious, and things that make us feel good. So chocolate is a good thing to have. The way to have it, though, I think, is to make sure it's organic. And in addition, it can be fair trade. There's more and more small businesses coming out that offer fair trade chocolate, equal exchange. There's a variety of companies. And this is a procedure where, for the most part, all the middlemen are taken out of the distribution equation, dropping some of the costs of manufacturing and distributing the chocolate, and making sure that the farmers that create the food get a fair, equitable wage, something that they can live on and make sure their children get an education. This is really important. I'm learning more and more about organic food. And when people say, how do you know? How can you trust? How can you be sure? How do you know it's just not a label? The more I'm reading, the more confidence I have in the importance of organic certification and the importance of supporting organic food. And sure, there's corruption everywhere. There's no question about that. But I believe for the most part that people that go into organic farming and organic certification are more interested in, I'm going to say this differently, they are not just interested in making a profit. There's love that goes into the growing of organic food. There is a relationship with nature, with the soil, with the bugs, with the birds, with the animals that roam the fields. And the more I talk to these farmers and read some of their articles and information, I feel better about it. And I feel more and more the importance of supporting them and buying organic. And this is true of chocolate, too. Because, for the most part, these companies care. And I really hope, I put this out there to the universe, that as we move into the future, companies will look more to social value rather than just a profit, a financial profit. It has to be that way. If we are going to survive, if we are going to succeed, I want to believe that the human race will evolve and we will include in the equation the social benefits of business. And so that means a product needs to be sustainable if it's being manufactured. And that has to be included in the cost equation. How to make something, how to make sure you don't make a mess in making it or pollute. If you're going to pollute, make sure there's something in the equation that cleans up the unwanted byproducts. And the people that are involved in making the product get a fair wage, that a livable wage, a wage where they can feed their family, send their children to school, and maybe have a little left over for emergencies. I think it'll happen, and it's definitely happening with the organic movement. I spoke with Atina Difflay on my It's All About Food show on Wednesday, and I learned so much from reading her book and then talking to her on the show. And I want to repeat the importance of organic certification, because I wasn't as sure before how important that was, because I know a lot of farmers don't get the certification. You know, you may go to a farmer's market and you may see food that says no pesticides used, but they don't have the certification because they don't want to go through the paperwork and they don't want to go through the 3-year process that's required to demonstrate that the soil and the property meets the certification requirements. And after speaking with Atina Difflay, I realized how important it was. And we need to do our part. And we need to do our part by supporting organic food. Okay, so here we go. We are going through Passover, going through Easter, and I hope you've had a very enjoyable holiday weekend. Passover can be exceptionally challenging for vegans that are trying to avoid wheat, too, because there are a lot of beans and things that aren't allowed to be consumed, and depending on what kind of Jew you are, based on where your ancestors came from, there's Sephardic and there's Ashkenazi, and the Ashkenazi are not supposed to eat rice or certain beans on this holiday, but because it's so ingrained, no pun intended, ingrained, but because it's so much a part of the Sephardic culture and the Sephardic cuisine, rice is allowed during this holiday. Anyway, I don't follow any rules. I eat what I want to eat. I just like to veganize traditional recipes, and that's what I've been doing and it's been a lot of fun. The other thing about chocolate that can be a fun project at home is to buy organic chocolate, either the bars or chocolate chips, and then make your own chocolate truffles, your own treats, by melting the chocolate. And there's a lot of different recipes for vegan chocolate truffles, but it can be really fun because you can make the base chocolate. We just did some by adding some coconut oil into it. You need to add something into the chocolate to make it a little smoother, otherwise it'll just chill and firm up into a hard chocolate that has a little, that's really solid and snaps when you bite it, rather than a creamy chocolate. But you can mix some chopped nuts with it or some coconut, roll them up into little balls and coat them with different nuts and things and put them in nice little paper cups and make your own collection of really delicious chocolate treats. That's fun. That's good. Another person I spoke to on Wednesday was Susan LeBion, and she wrote a book called French Kids Eat Better. And there's another book that's been getting a lot of mention in the press, Bringing Up Bebe. And the conversation is about how, due to the culture in France, French kids are better behaved and eat better. And I can imagine that this pisses a lot of people off. But we have so much to learn from so many different cultures. And this is another part of my vision, my wish, where we take all the good things from the different cultures and we leave the not so good things behind. Because, sure, the French are pretty good at some things, but they're not good at everything. And I will agree that young children in particular, when they're raised in the French culture, they are more polite and they do have better eating habits. I lived in the south of France for 4 years and I definitely saw many children. And they definitely were better behaved. And what is that? I think it's a combination of things. And like I said, you want to take the good things from cultures and leave the bad behind. And so we're so focused here in the United States on empowering our young children with a strong self-image, a strong self-esteem, and an ability to make decisions and to support the child's the child's will, the child's ideas, the child's determination. And this is all great, but when we're talking about babies and 2-year-olds and 3-year-olds and 4-year-olds, 5-year-olds, they don't know what to eat. And they need guidance. And the home needs to be filled with healthy foods, not junk foods. And if they're going to be given a choice, it needs to be a choice that is formed, a choice of only healthy selection. So maybe the child feels a bit empowered, but you're also guiding them. But what I learned in the book, French Kids Eat Better, and there was another article in the New York Times this weekend that talked about it as well. And this is what was really frustrating, is that for the parents that either come from Europe or France and have this culture and they come to the United States, or for those American and Canadian families that want to incorporate this upbringing, or they figured it out on their own where they want to feed their children better and require a certain number of constraints, I don't want to use that word, but guidelines. They come up with some brick walls because I don't know how we got here, but the systems in this country make it next to impossible to really bring up children in a way that they're well-fed and learn respect and politeness. Now, when I was in France, the young kids were great, but I had an opportunity to enroll in the college. It was a great way for me to legally stay in France. And so I had a student visa and I was going to school there. I really enjoyed it and I felt very, very lucky that I was able to take advantage of that opportunity. And I was studying music and I was studying German. And what frustrated me was the students were not as appreciative of the opportunity. Now, you may not know this, but education, college education in France is free. There are some really small expenses. Now, this was in the 90s. I think I spent maybe $200 on a variety of different books, things. But it's free. And there are some very outstanding schools there, and there are some mediocre schools. And I was in, I think, one of the relatively mediocre schools. But the kids were not appreciative in the program, and this made me crazy. And so I'm not sure, I hope it's changed. That was 15 years ago, and hopefully the government's kind of kicked in and tighten things up a little. I don't know, but even with the culture of training the young children to eat well and be polite, something happens with teenagers and young adults, and it's happening all around the world, where there's less respect. And then the other thing is not appreciating all the good things. We have so much in this country and in Europe as well. And we talk about the economy, and it's true. The economy has stagnated and many people are looking for work and having a difficult time. But our standard of living is amazing, even when we're struggling. There's really so much to be grateful for. So I don't have the solutions, but I really do think that the French way of bringing up children with respect to eating, not what they eat, because I don't agree with what they eat, it's just how they eat, is really important. And I would like to see more kids over here get that sort of training. Let's see. Oh, and then there was this one article last week in the paper. I don't know if you saw it, but it was about Starbucks. And it just says so much. But Starbucks was struggling in Paris because the French don't want to have their coffee in a paper cup. And this was just so classic. Now, you know, when you open a business, you're supposed to evaluate your market. You're supposed to get to know your market. It reminds me of when Euro Disney first installed itself in Paris. And there were a lot of growing pains in the early days. Number one, they weren't selling wine because Disney didn't do that. It was a policy at all of the Disney parks. But you can't do that in a culture where wine is important with the meal. And so that had to change amongst a number of cultural things. And I imagine it's doing better these days. But Starbucks also has been struggling, and having coffee or tea I think there's more coffee that's drunk in France, but when I was there, it would be tea. It's just such a lovely experience. And sometimes I look for the European-style cafes when I'm in New York and I want to get a cup of tea or something, because it's so much more satisfying to sit at a table and unwind and relax and be able to watch people on the street or talk to your companion and drink out of a porcelain cup instead of a disposable paper cup. It's just such a beautiful experience. And so people aren't going for drinking in a paper cup. They also, it's part of their culture where you only eat during mealtimes at a table. You don't eat in the car. You don't eat on the run. You don't snack unless it's sitting down at a table with people at a specific time. And so this drinking beverages on the run just doesn't fly. You need to know your culture, and I think that's really one of the nicer things about the French culture. There's a song that I like to sing called Coffee in a Cardboard Cup. I might have to play that sometime soon. But it starts out, the trouble with the world today, it's plain to see, is coffee in a cardboard cup. Huh. Okay, let's see what we got to talk about now. So there's an organization called Compassion Over Killing. Are you aware of them? And like many other organizations, they have a program that's coming up soon to promote vegetarianism and encourage people to eat a healthier diet. So Compassion Over Killing, I believe their website is cok.org. They do lots of interesting things, and you can certainly get lots of information from them about the treatment of chickens and eggs since we were on that subject. They've been doing a lot of campaigning to improve the condition for chickens over the years. They have something called Veg Week, and it's this year, right after Earth Day. I guess they hold it every year after Earth Day. So this year it will be April 23rd to the 29th. They have Veg Week, where they encourage people to pledge, and you pledge at their site. The site is usvegweek.com, and you get a free vegetarian starter kit. You get recipes and coupons from their corporate sponsors. You get daily emails of meal ideas, nutritional information, product recommendation, motivational tips. And they have a calendar of events because there are different things going on in celebration of the Veg Week. Cooking demos, bake sales, restaurant benefits, movie screenings. There are so many documentaries out today about food to encourage you to eat a healthier plant-based diet of organic, locally grown foods. And there are outreach opportunities. And if you want to, you can participate and get involved. And Responsible Eating and Living, my nonprofit organization, responsibleeatingandliving.com. Of course, you know that because you're listening at the site. We have agreed to sign on and help promote Veg Week. And as I said, different organizations have their own different programs to kind of give people a kick in the butt. And sometimes it's just something simple like this that really helps people going, whether it's a one-week pledge or a 30-day pledge or a 60-day pledge. Sometimes it's a once-a-week pledge every Monday. Mark Bittman had this thing for a while where it was vegan after six. There's all different kinds of ways to encourage you to move over to the plant food side and incorporate more plants in your diet. So this is one thing that Compassion Over Killing is doing, usvegweek.com. And maybe if you have some friends and family that are kind of teetering, you might encourage them to go to this site and participate for the week, because it could be fun. Okay, in the news. You know, I usually start with news first, and I didn't. So there you go. I'm going to talk about news now. And I printed something out, and I'm looking for it, and I can't find it, so I'm just going to have to remember. But the Food and Drug Administration recently came out, unfortunately, with not doing much about BPA, biphenyl A. We were waiting for them to make a designation on whether it was going to be banned, because there's more and more information that it affects us in very negative ways. they have, in 2008, the Food and Drug Administration did a review of toxicology research and information on BPA, and they judged that food-related materials on the market were safe. And they recently came out and supported that same statement. We were waiting and hoping that they would make a different determination. But unfortunately, you know, the FDA, I don't want to give them a bad rap, but they're struggling. They have a hard time, and they don't get the funds they need to do the good work that they should be doing. And so it's really up to ourselves to educate ourselves and make the right choices for our families. And interestingly, BPA... Okay, I thought I printed out a whole thing here, and maybe I didn't print it out. There you go. BPA is found in many, many different cans, food cans, and it's found to be an endocrine disruptor. Oh, it's in plastic bottles, and it's going to affect young children the most. This chemical often lines infant formula containers and baby bottles. But what can we do about it? Well, the good news is that in canned food, for example, there are cans that are BPA-free. Take, for example, Eden Organic. And there's that word again, organic. It's the organic food people that care. Eden Organic, who have been canning beans since 1999, have been using BPA-free cans. They've been doing this for over a decade. Why everyone else hasn't followed suit, I don't know. But Eden Organic, this is the company. If you're buying beans, this is where you should get it from. There are some other companies that use BPA-free cans. Now, in addition to Eden Organic, Native Forest also has some BPA-free can liners, and in their coconut milk, for example, and I believe they're the only ones that offer a BPA-free can for coconut milk. And the unfortunate thing is some of these companies don't label enough whether they're and make it obvious enough that their cans are BPA-free, so you really have to do some digging. Trader Joe's has a variety of products that are BPA-free, but they're not consistently all BPA-free. And I'm looking for the list that are apparently, according to their customer relations, their canned corn, canned beans, canned fish, canned poultry, and canned beef at Trader Joe's are all packaged in BPA-free cans. But other products that contain corns or beans or fish in soups or chilies are not in BPA-free cans. But I think this is going to change because consumers are getting a little smarter. Now, of course, the ideal thing, if you're worried about BPA, is to make your food from scratch in your kitchen. It's easy to buy dried beans, soak them overnight or during the day, and cook them. You can cook up a big batch and freeze some of it if you want, or keep some of it in the refrigerator. Dried beans are the ideal way to go. But if you're going to buy canned beans, and I like to have them because it's a great, easy, quick thing to do. And also, if you like to have the idea of having emergency food on hand, it's good to have canned beans. And Eden Organic is really the best place to get those BPA-free cans. Yes. Now, Campbell's doesn't have BPA-free cans, but they've made an announcement and they said they are going to phase out the old method and stop using BPA. We don't know when it's going to happen, but they say they're going to start doing it. Okay, so some would say that we don't need to have government rules to make commercial enterprise do the right thing, that they will naturally do it. Maybe yes, maybe no, but what definitely needs to happen is the consumer needs to be savvy. The consumer needs to know. And part of the problem is we don't know. We don't have enough labeling. It's hard to know. And there's just a lot that goes on the shoulder of the individual to be educated about all the food that we eat to make sure that things that we don't want are not in our food. It's hard. That's why we rely on the government. But unfortunately, we can't all the time rely on them to do what's right or to do what's in our own personal interest. And this BPA, it's in so many things. It's kind of scary. If you go to the FDA website, they have lots of information about BPA information for parents, and they explain what it is, and they explain what kind of precautions you can do to minimize your infant's exposure. And there's a lot of things. You don't want to be using scratched baby bottles. You don't want to heat the milk too hot in the bottle. Sure, you may let it cool down to the right temperature before the child drinks it, but that enables some of the BPA to leach into the milk when you heat it too high. So if you're interested in or about concerned about BPA, I would definitely recommend going to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services website. It's hhh.gov/safety/BPA. That's BPA biphenyl A. Oh, it's hard to live in this world, isn't it? Earth Day is coming up in 2 weeks. What's always exciting for me is it's my birthday on Earth Day. And I went over to a number of different Earth Day sites to see what they were talking about. It's always a little frustrating because I'm waiting for the environmental protection world to start screaming about how important it is for us to eat plant foods and get rid of factory farming of animals. The encouraging thing was there's this one site, I think it was earthday.com. Let's see, I want to check that site. Earthday.org. Earthday.org, yeah. And they have this billion acts of green, a billion acts of green, and they ask you to, this is at act.earthday.org, and you can put in, you can sign up and register and share what your act of green is going to be. And in just scanning the site, I was happy to see that maybe not the people promoting the particular event, but there were lots of people that were saying that what they would do was go vegan or eat local. So more and more people are getting savvy about the environment and how our food choices affect the environment. And that's all good, because the more of us that get involved, the stronger, the bigger our purchasing pot becomes. Then suppliers always come to meet demand. When the supply of something goes down, that product goes away. We need to be putting our dollars towards the products that we believe in. And Earth Day, like I mentioned, is my birthday, and it's an important day for me. I like to celebrate it, not just my birthday, but the Earth. I'm not quite sure what I'm going to be doing that day. I'm still thinking about it. If you have any ideas, I'd love to hear them. Okay, let's see. Just a few minutes left, and I wanted to remind you, if you're in the Washington, D.C. area next weekend, April 14th and 15th, Responsible Eating and Living will be at the Take Back Your Health conference, and we've got our own little red carpet that will be in the exhibitor area. You can come by, be part of our interview. We're going to be interviewing speakers and people that pass by, and we'll be posting a program on our website. Take Back Your Health conference. I like the name, because health really depends on each of us as individuals. That's my continual theme here. It's up to us individually. It's an interesting thing about health, and I don't have a lot of time to get into this right now, but I want to encourage people, if you have a particular health problem, if something doesn't feel just right, it may take a long time to figure out what it is, but do not give up. I think that we are all meant to feel good all day long. Sure, if you've had some sort of accident or some sort of fall where something has been physically damaged, it may take some time to heal, and unfortunately some people may not heal to the original way that they originally had the structure of their body. But for the most part, we should not be thinking that discomfort and aches and poor digestion is natural as we age. It's not. And so if there are little things that are bothering you, don't take them for granted. Things only get bigger. Things only get worse. I was thinking about my own personal situation. And, you know, unfortunately our society, we've got a long way to go. with our society and doing things right. So as you may know, when I was about 6 years ago now, I was diagnosed with ovarian cancer. And sometimes people will say to me, how is it you were on such a healthy diet that you got sick? Or, come on, you can't believe that all of these diseases are caused by food. And I do believe that most of the chronic diseases today are due to poor food and lifestyle. And sure, I was on this healthy path, but I had signs very early on that I had a problem. And I just kind of took it in stride and never really made a big deal about it until it became a big problem. So as a teenager, when I first started menstruating, I never had normal menstruation. I always had a heavy, heavy flow. And I would hope that teenagers today, at least with the internet, if they have a particular health problem and they're not comfortable about talking about it with anyone, can go to the internet and find reliable information. I didn't have that. And I didn't even think about really discussing it because it was my own personal experience. I didn't know what was natural or not natural, and I just dealt with it. But I know that I had a problem from very early on, and I just lived with it. And I believe because of my healthy diet, I was able to live with it for a very long time until I got a little out of balance somehow and it got out of control. So whatever it is, and certainly encouraging conversation with your children to make sure that they feel good about themselves mentally and physically. It's challenging. I know that I certainly talked to my doctors over the years. I never had a consistent doctor for a long time, unfortunately, thanks to our healthcare system, and because I traveled a lot and lived in different places. But I would mention, matter-of-factly, my concerns. And no one really thought it was a problem, but it was. And I might have been able to have done something about it earlier on. So I encourage you to, if your instinct is telling you something isn't right, you should look into it. And I hope that you feel good, because we are meant to feel good and experience joy while we are here on this earth. You're listening to Ask a Vegan. I'm Karen Hartglass, and I love to hear from you, so I hope you'll send me an email sometime at info@realmeals.org. We've got a campaign right now where we're trying to reach 1,000 likes on our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/responsibleeatingandliving. Please visit us there. Give us a like. And that's all for now. I'll check in next week after the Take Back Your Health conference, and we'll do another Ask a Vegan Hour. Thank you so much for listening. Have a great week, and I'm going to end here with the real jingle.
R-E-A-L.
Responsible eating and living.
R-E-A-L.
Reels, good for the planet, the inhabitants who need sound advice on the right thing to do
when it comes to good health.
We need facts that are true to choose what to eat and save the planet too. That's responsible eating and living.